catch it, draw it, make it, change it, fix it, make it, save it, share it. Cavist Action. This is the Cavist Action Podcast. Cavist Action.
Hello and welcome back to the Cavist Action Podcast. I am, of course, your host, Ollie, and today I am pleased and grateful to be joined by Tim Walder, who is the Senior Director and Aviation Sector Leader for Arcadis, as well as being a British Aviation Group board member, a Coastal Capital LEP 360 degree board member, and if that wasn't enough, he is also a careers enterprise advisor in the Croydon and Worthing area, as well as being a qualified personal development coach. That's quite a spectrum there, Tim.
Thanks, Ollie. Yeah, it does sound quite a lot, but then when you've been in the industry for over 40 years, you sort of pick them up as you go along.
I'll be honest, I've known you a hell of a long time, and we've talked about your job over the years, but I never fully understand it. Do you want to just give a brief description as to what your day-to-day role is within Arcadis?
Sure, Ollie. As the title says, it's aviation sector leader. So I look after our aviation sector, which has got a multidiscipline group of individuals. Before COVID-19, we were about 130 guys and girls that were engineers, architects, program managers, risk managers, chartered surveyors. Really, yeah, that covers most of it. And what we actually do is we work for a number of clients, including CAA, which is Civil Aviation Authority, Gatwick Airport, London City Airport, Manchester Airport Group, Schiphol Airport as well, Highlands and Islands as well, who own and run 11 airports up in Scotland. And we provide from master planning and technical due diligence services. So if someone's looking at expanding their airport, what's it going to look like in the future, up to about 10, 15 years, maybe even longer than that. We've worked on Gatwick's second runway. We've worked on Heathrow's third runway to understand the economic positions that those runways and those expansions would face. We also do a lot of design and engineering work. So for the Highlands, for example, we're doing REBA, which is the Royal Institute of British Architects, stage 3 and 4 design for their virtual control tower monitoring facility. So each airport will have a virtual control tower, and then they'll have one central hub, which will be an office block in Inverness. So we're doing the design for that.
Yep.
At London City Airport, which I know is quite close to you, it's probably pretty quiet these days. But again, they've had a big program, and we've looked after the client's governance. So it's really around certainty of delivery, where the program project management side comes in. And we look at the schedule, we look at the cost, we look at the risks, we look at the buildability. So it's from program project management to project controls to the cost of the expansion program, and right down to how much each supplier contractor is involved in, for example. I think that probably gives you a good indication. We also look after the assets to make sure they're maintained. Obviously, the aviation sector at the moment is in a really big challenge. It's been hit hard. It's been hit deep by COVID. So the team has shrunk, but we're still working at London City. We're still working at Gatwick, Highlands and Islands, and Schiphol Airport, and for the CAA. So there's still work out there, because when the recovery does come back, everybody will want to start flying again. Gatwick knows, for example, that it's a leisure airport. People will be booking their holidays. I've heard already that over 50s are massively out there booking their holidays already. So, yeah, in a nutshell, hopefully, a long, big nutshell, that's what I do. And, yeah, I look after the team, effectively.
For me, thinking about my listeners, obviously, this is a CAD-based podcast, and some of them are probably thinking, why would I invite you to be a part of this? You're a very different scale to me. But one of the things I was really interested in when we were talking recently, you, as you say, you deal with a lot of teams. You have been in the industry about 50 years. It's fair to say you're a senior member of the team, and you probably didn't grow up around the technologies you're now somewhat being forced to use. You know, we're talking about the video conferencing tools. You know, you're more heavily reliant on email. I suppose as someone who's grown up around that, and as part of my role, it kind of forces me into that. How are you finding that transition? Because you were, a commuter. You know, you did 4 to 5 days traveling, driving into an office. You're now, and I believe this is still true, you're still currently working from home, completely remote. How have you found that transition, and how have you found the technology? Obviously, it's somewhat company dependent and what the company supports you with, but on a personal level, if you don't mind me asking, how have you found that transition? And are there any technological struggles that you face?
I've been very lucky, Ollie. No problems whatsoever. I always did work from home at least one day a week anyway. And my phone was obviously by my side from that technological perspective, and my laptop. But now I hardly ever use my phone. When the first lockdown happened, there were 3,000 of us in the UK. There's 29,000 worldwide. And we all got to working at home easily. And it was a struggle to start with. But when we actually think about how we migrated to using Teams, Teams is improving as well. We prefer Teams to Zoom, although some of the clients I work with use Zoom. It's worked really, really well. The IT access to our systems has worked really, really well. We've been able to work very much full time without any problems. Interesting, when we did look at how we could set people up, so we've also made sure people have a screen, they've got obviously the laptop, have they got a separate keyboard, have they got the right chair so that they're working. We know, I'm very lucky, I've got a room which is mine which I can work in, but we've got people that are working at the end of their beds. It's not a great, but when we actually look at it, we've got design centers in India and they were given about 4 or 5 hours notice to go home and start to work. It wasn't quite like picking up their laptop. They had desktops and so they got home and we're all working. So for me, it's been an easy transition. And I would say that myself and many others feel quite productive in how we've worked.
Less opportunity for someone to wander across and, oh, can I just grab you for this? Is kind of the indication I've got. Yeah. It's interesting from, you know, listening on various channels on CAD manager groups. And, you know, I'm thinking many aviation is obviously CAD, quite a large CAD background in that, and the, you know, production images that sell your products. For CAD teams to pick up a move, for some it's not so easy, particularly when you're dealing with programs like Revit and Inventor. You need local access to, you know, large storage servers, and as you say, picking up their desktops. The transition's always hard. I think as a manager it's slightly easier. Have you found that, particularly with departments that deal with those types of information, you know, producing plans, and or are you not really seeing any at the moment because people aren't planning? Or, you know, are you seeing plans, and have you found that actually being able to use tools like Teams where you can sketch over and then they can save that has actually been quite powerful?
It has, absolutely. I'll give you two examples. The during the pandemic in 2020, we're in 2021 now, we continued working on the Highlands and Islands project. We were doing REBA stage 1 and 2 design. And the teams were able to work remotely using the BIM model. We were able to plug into the BIM model, the financial side of it. So using BIM 5D, the team was still able to function well. We're also, not my section within the organization, but the rail team are doing high speed too. A lot of the design there. And that's continued as well. Although the bases were a design hub in Croydon, Warrington, Birmingham and Marseille, the idea was that those hubs would enable people to collaborate, to work together in an environment they could. There have been challenges on a big, big program like that. The teams have got through it and they work well, as you say, using Teams to communicate. They are looking, though, to the point where they can come back and work collaboratively together. But actually, we've always, with our design teams in India and program and project management teams that we've got in Manila that work with us, learnt to work remotely. We've done that for many, many years. And it has actually proved that in the UK, to our clients, that we can do it better as well. So although the pandemic has had massive, massive impact on our lives, I run our Croydon office as well as that those other titles. And we have a weekly community call. And I know that people have been struggling in the way they're working. But the more that we communicate both on that work level, but also work to support the well-being of people, I think we can still be very efficient in design. We can be very efficient in project management and program management as well. Whatever discipline, it's learned to adapt.
I suppose it's quite interesting when you think about companies like Arcadis, which are, you know, I'm going to say enterprise level, but they're so large where they are international, that these kind of problems, which SMEs are facing where they're trying to go remote. You know, maybe they're a team of 10 comparatively to people who employ 500 plus. When you're international, you've already learned those lessons of remote working, we're working remote teams. Whereas smaller businesses, although more dynamic in their ability to respond, unlike large organizations, I think they're the ones that have critically struggled with this. But from my point of view, it's really interesting because, you know, being a freelance draftsman, I work remote 90% of the time. So a lot of the tools that I use haven't changed. I suppose the people I'm working with have become more familiar with them, which has been great because it's made my life easy because, you know, selfishly, I might not be asked to travel quite so much, which makes sense. But on the flip side of that, we talk about people who, as you say, are working at the ends of their beds in their bedrooms because they live in a flat share which might not have a desk. You know, I know from my own personal experience, I live in a two-bed flat. My housemate has a desk in the lounge. He works Monday to Friday there. I'm very fortunate, or unfortunate, depending on where you look at it. I have a studio 10 minutes walk away. Financial burden, however, has enabled me to be isolated and work and continue working. I suppose the people I feel sorry for, I suppose, and I think I'd be very interested to see how people like Arcadis over the next 12 months, and I'm not picking on them in general, I'm using them as an example, how they look after their junior team members who might not be in homes which have an extra room to provide a place for them to work. You know, what welfare, as you say, welfare is going to be a big thing over the next 12 months to ensure that both mentally and physically people are looking after themselves, because office environments are great for that, because you can pick up on people's well-being. You can see how they're doing and grab them for a quick coffee and say, is everything okay? And that's something at the moment, I think, as you say, that weekly catch-up is probably one of the most powerful things you do at the moment to make sure everyone's okay.
Yeah, very true, Ollie. That sort of well-being and people being able to perform and do their job, and then when during the day, can they relax in the evening, is absolutely critical. What we have done is, for those that are really struggling, we have kept a number of our offices open so people can go. So our London office in King's Cross is open, our Bristol office, our Warrington office, and the Cambridge office. That allows people that have got really, sometimes it's not so much the well-being side, it's the actual access. The Wi-Fi may be okay, but the internet connectivity may not be good. So to be able to come in an office, have that environment where you can physically work better, that helps. But on the, you're absolutely on the well-being side, I mean, we have a program of mental health first aiders, which I went through the first qualification on that, and that's superb to help people. But what we've also done is regular staff surveys, see how people are feeling. And actually, each survey has learned more. We've now seen how introverts and extroverts are starting to feel. We're beginning to find that, you know, although people are saying, I haven't got the commute, I'm using that as my work time. So we try and make sure that people take extra breaks. We make sure line managers are more in touch. We do the weekly calls. I think everybody's probably zoomed out on quizzes, etc. But that sort of, that social interface, I mean, we are social animals. That needs to be the part of how we can work. And from the SME perspective, you raise a massively valid point. And one of the areas that used to the beginning that I work is with the Coastal Capital Local Enterprise Partnership led on the 360 Skills Board. And it's supporting the SMEs. The bigger companies, if we are going to all grow, if we are going to make sure that the workplaces of the future are places where the next generation coming in are going to enjoy working, whether it's from a perspective of an SME or a larger company or a public body or organisation, everybody's got to support and learn from each other. And so the bigger companies who have got more facilities and more resources need to support the SMEs, and that's part of my real driver as well.
As I said before, the interesting thing for me is the SMEs are dynamic and, you know, have the ability to pivot and change very quickly. However, they very rarely have the resources to implement that. Whereas the enterprise have the resources, but not the ability to pivot that fast, because you're trying to train up maybe 500, 600, you know, or well, in fact, I'm looking at Arcadis's profile now, was they're registering 23,000 plus employees. You know, trying to roll out something across your team is a challenge, I would imagine. We're just going to implement this small change to our email protocol. Okay, that's 23,000 emails to send, potentially, to implement that, which is a huge scale.
It is, although big companies have the way that they structure so that they can look at different levels within an organisation. And actually, we've just got, you've hit on a massively interesting point, we have just restructured. We've looked where we were regionally based, so the US and Latin America working together, UK and Ireland, Europe, Asia, Middle East, Australia. We're now bringing it together so that we have a more global base instead of it being regional. And that means that people that are working on aviation projects in Australia can communicate better with those working on them in the UK. We're looking at our environmental teams that are working in America to work with Europe and trying to get a much more global perspective. And this is not just us making a, wow, this is a make great move. We listen to the staff. We listen to the next generation coming through, what's important to them working with clients and how to work with clients. And it's a brave move, but we've just launched our new structure.
I suppose the interesting thing was that structure being implemented before all of this happened, or has it come about or been driven faster by the current situation of COVID? Because I suppose coming together makes sense because we're in a more digital world where we can do that. Whereas previously where you'd be locked down by telephones and maybe limited emails. Do you think it's been driven more by COVID-19 to become more global? Or do you think it's just you are naturally progressing to that point anyway and you're a little bit of ahead of the curve potentially?
You've heard the expression before, don't ever let a good crisis go by without getting involved. And in 2008, when we had the banking crisis and we were then EC Harris, we changed and got involved with Arcadis, or a Dutch company who bought into us. And I think it's an opportunity to look at the structure of how you are facing the market, how internally you're organised. We are beginning to see mergers begin now to happen. That happened in 2008-09. Multidiscipline companies came together. We have looked at that need at the moment and what our clients' needs are changing. And we're actually seeing that the environmental side of our business is a real growth area. I mean, working in aviation, there's always challenges from the environmental side, noise pollution, air pollution, carbon zero challenges. And actually what we want to do is to help both the airlines and the airports get better at understanding their challenges on the climate change front and do something about it. And you can't do that by just saying, oh, we'll change a little bit. You've really got to look at restructuring and organising yourself so that you can make a massive difference. And that's what we've done. We've taken the opportunity now to do it.
That's good. In terms of timelines for your projects, because I think about, again, rolling this back to more my CAD work again, and forgive me for doing that, it's, you know, my timelines are normally maybe anywhere between a week to 3 months. You know, I think some projects I've gone 6 months. Again, depends on the organisation, but do you think it's fair to say that your projects are, well, your projects, safe to say, I would imagine, are multi-year projects. What's the average timeline on one of your projects?
Ooh, that's a difficult question. If we look at that, so I'll break it down. If we're doing the master plan, then obviously that would probably take us about 6 months. But what that does is basically set out a very broad brush thinking about what the facilities look like today, how many more passengers are going to go through that airport. Gatwick, for example, when it was working full bore, getting about 46 million passengers through it a year. When it comes back, and like any airport, that's going to be at least 50%, if not more, down. So the master plan will be looked at. But then when master plans develop into the projects, you then get programmes of work, and the design may take on a new terminal or a new pier, probably 18 months to 2 years. And then the construction, another similar time span. But airports and office refurbishments, because airports are, you know, people say it's an airport, but it can be a shopping centre. You know, you've got a shopping centre, you've got catering, you've got passenger processing facilities, you've got the baggage, you've got a real mix. You have big projects, you have small projects. The maintenance small projects, they can take a couple of months. And so, going back to the point about the CAD, where we see the advantage is one, making sure an airport, very often our airports are public, are private, where, you know, our highways and our rail are very much public authorities. So the clients haven't got lots of money to spend in aviation. So getting their whole airport mapped onto a BIM and using GIS is going to be a massive task. But each project, if it can come together and start to add to that model, is important.
It becomes more powerful to have the original and build upon it rather than having to do that from scratch each time.
Absolutely.
And that's a big key part of client retention.
Yes.
Because, although I suppose it depends on your policies on sharing that information if it's built into the contract at the end. One of the things that's been interesting for me over the last couple of years talking to other freelancers, even outside of the theatre industry, is a lot of them won't actually share the original DWG or, you know, the original drawing file. They'll share the PDFs and the outputs and maybe an online viewable model, but they won't actually share the original content unless it's built into the contract. And, you know, I suppose that's dependent on the job and the cost that you've put against that, because you'll probably put a higher cost against giving across those models than you would keeping them and retaining them, because it's almost a job, you know, guaranteed they will come back at some point for that information.
When we're looking at a big program like Manchester Airport, where we've taken double the size of their Terminal 2, new car parks, new pier, the client wants to have all that data as well so that they can do all the maintenance. And you know, one of the pieces of work that our teams have been doing is putting all the asset data into the model as well, and the client will get that. So the cost data's in there, the design data's in there, the asset data's in there. So, you know, when you go to look at replacements of air conditioning filters, public address system, speakers, etc., all that's put in as to when those maintenance programs. So you have to pass all that over to the client as well. And one of the big advantages that I see that you know, as you say, I've been in the industry a long time. You said 50 years. I wouldn't have started when I was 13 years old. So I.
Okay. I apologize for that. I'm not trying to age you.
Yeah.
Maybe you just look so wise. That's the problem.
If I look at the way we used to work with architects and engineers, so they used to build a model of what the facility would look like, so the client could see what it looked like. There would be sketches so that they could get a more of a feel of what the project would be like to the living eye, should we say. Now, having I've seen in my working lifetime, CAD go to the thing where you've got now 3D rendering, you've got the fly-throughs of the facilities. And to be able to, I mean, projects, as I'm sure you know, you found with the theatres, what actually gets designed at the beginning and what is actually there at the end are not two different things. There's similarities, but there have been changes. And for the clients now to be able to see in real virtual world what their projects are going to look like, and they can change it and they can adapt it. Heathrow are even looking at a digital twin, but also a carbon digital twin, so they could see where their hotspots were. And it's wonderful that you can do that now. Not that we did it badly in the when I started in the 70s and 80s, but
it's just a different way of looking at things.
Well, it creates something that the clients can make decision points on much quicker. It doesn't take so long to do it. And you can see not only what it looks like, you can see how much it's going to cost from many different aspects, and how long it's going to take as well. Would I want to come back into the industry and start again? Oh, yes, I would. You know, it's fascinating now.
Well, you've got tools like generative design, which will do quite a lot. And in fact, there was a film recently, and I'm going to completely blank on the name. It was on Netflix. And actually, the internal structure of the ship looked as if it was generatively designed. And it was a beautiful example of how it could be used. But no, the reason I mentioned the VRAR, there's actually a new platform that I've discovered because one of my clients put me onto it. They said, oh, you've got to get a VR headset so you can join our meetings. They're now doing meetings using VR. And you create your avatar and your floating head and hands with a little body underneath. And you can all be in the same VR room, and you can put up the computer digital whiteboard in your VR room. So you can maneuver around, point, draw, and feel as if you're in the same room. which is kind of the next Zoom 2.0 or Teams 2.0. I'm not going to get branded on the video platforming here, but you get what I mean. It's going to be quite interesting to see if that is the next iteration, because I know personally I'm trying to look at VR for putting models into theatres and items like that, and just looking at products with clients just before it even gets built. Because sometimes you look at stuff on the screen, and I suppose probably even more so when you're designing larger scale, when you look at it on the screen, it all looks, yeah, that looks fine. And then you look at it in reality and it's like, God, it's five times bigger than I thought, or, you know, it's much, much too big. Whoops, let's add another shop in here.
Well, one of the great examples that I saw, must have been about 18 months ago now, was baggage handling systems. You know, once you see your, say goodbye to your bag at the airport, it goes down into the bowels, it goes through different racetracks, it goes through x-ray machines, it goes through sorting machines, and eventually pops out into a container that's going to go onto the plane, hopefully. Well, now using the artificial intelligence and the modeling, I was able to have two handsets with the virtual reality goggles on, and actually pick a bag up and put it onto a conveyor belt. First of all, I dropped it a few times, but anyway, that's the right. But so that comes through. But for me, that's only part of it, because if you think about, that's going to help in very constrained areas. I mean, I've been in the baggage halls in Terminal 1, and I have to duck to get through some of them.
That's saying something.
they are very constrained spaces. And so you can get an understanding of how the design can work, how you can get the components in if you've got to upgrade a system inside of this existing building. But also now, if you start to use time, you can start to see what it looks like when it's operating at full bore, 12, probably more 16, 18 hours a day. What does that system capacity look like? How does it work? Where do you get blockages? And so for me, again, if you start introducing the time side of knowledge coming in as well, we're going to move this to a different level.
So moving into 2021, taking on your life coach hat as we come to the end of this podcast, what would you say to people as advice heading into 2021, as we're still stuck in quite a, some would say, dark situation? What would you say?
Gosh, that's a difficult one to generalize on that. But I would say to people, the most important person that you've got to think about is yourself. And if you take the analogy of being in an aeroplane, and the masks drop down, they always say to you, put the mask on first before you can help others. So if you are feeling that you're under pressure, under stress, you've got to think about yourself. What could you do? How can you look at your work patterns? How do you look at how you can maybe take more breaks? Do something that you enjoy doing. When you've done something, a task or that, well, give yourself a little reward. Actually break things up. I'd say at the moment, the monotony is, I think, the biggest challenge that everyone is facing at the moment. And if you can break that day up, feel proud of what you've achieved, look at how you're working. And very often I say to people, if they are struggling with what the future is holding, is to be able to see whether you can go even further. Sometimes it's important to look back and just reflect how far you have actually come. And if you think how we've survived through 2020, hopefully we're now on the last legs of getting back to, we won't get back to normal. It'll be a new normal in the way that we work and operate. And there will be challenges in how we do that. But I think challenges that are going to push us forward and have even more fun. But I would say to people, believe in yourself. Look at what you have achieved. Break things up so that you are able to look at big tasks in a smaller light, and reward yourself when you know that you've done a good job.
It was something I wanted to ask, because I was thinking about this recently, because one of the things I've said to a lot of people, it's okay not to be okay. You know, we've got in this environment, we're talking more, even that 5-minute call to a friend every day, even though you've got nothing to say, because no one, I think it's fair to say that we've all run out of things to say these days, because we've had every conversation. How's the garden? How's the kitchen? Have you decorated the bedroom? Yep, done that. And I'll be honest, projects, I'd say in general, aren't particularly inspiring at the moment. But I sat down and reflected on my 2020 maybe a couple of weeks ago. And because I was updating my website, I thought, oh, time for a little refresh. And I sat there and thought, what the hell have I done this year? 2020 just felt numb. There was nothing there. And I went through my calendar, because I'm quite forceful on my calendar, and actually found that I'd done something like 8 or 9 good projects. And even though they were to the earlier part of the year, they were still notable projects. They weren't like throwaway projects at all. And it was only then that I realized 2020 wasn't a complete waste of time, which I think a lot of people will feel. So I agree, I absolutely wholeheartedly agree with you in the sense that do have a look at last year and find the good and the light, and hope that you can do the same this year as it builds up more. I'm always very nervous of this is the new normal. I hate that. I don't want it to be the new normal. But I agree with what you're saying. I think people are going to be more cautious. I think office environments will change. And I do welcome, and I know that you're certainly considering this, although I don't want to put words in your mouth, about working at home more than you previously did. Because your commute's quite long, an hour and a half each way.
Yeah. No, definitely am. Because we also see that office space now being used more for collaborative working rather than the need to be sitting in an office 24/7, 5 days a week sort of thing. We know that everyone can work very efficiently and productively remotely. So it's only really for the team meetings, the collaboration. Team meetings can still be virtual, of course, as well. Mm. But actually having that ability to use a collaborative space, and we're actually moving our head office from King's Cross to 80 Fenchurch Street, and it's a much more collaborative space that we're producing, and there'll be more touchdown points for people to come in, use the facilities for more collaboration, communication with, if you need bigger facilities to look at working with the teams in the States, for example, so the technology, and for people's well-being. That is absolutely really, really key for the future. So, it is an overused expression, the new normal now. Passenger journeys will be different in the future. That's one thing we've been looking at, how the airport will transform and how passengers are processed. And even thinking of that, instead of it being, I'm going to the airport, I'm flying, and then I'm getting out the other side. It's home to destination. Will your bag be picked up from home? Will you find it in your hotel room when you get to the other end?
Oh, wouldn't that be nice?
Contactless. Well, there are companies already doing that. So it is. It will be different. And I think we've all got a part to play in that. We can all influence what that future looks like so that we enjoy the more social interactivity that we get as we come back, and make the most of it, but also pick out the best bits that we've enjoyed through the COVID challenges.
Yeah, it's a good challenge to find the enjoyment through the COVID challenges. Although I must admit, the one thing I did enjoy was a Christmas dinner in my flat, although I miss my family. It showed us that we could actually do a full roast, which we've never actually done in the 4 years that we've lived there. We always go out to the pub. So, there's as you say, there's a little bit of joy. You just got to find them somewhere.
Absolutely.
Well, thank you so much for joining me for this podcast. I really appreciate it. And you taking the time out of your, and I will confess, it's a Sunday. I've cornered you on a Sunday. So I really appreciate that. And I wish you all the best for the coming year.
Thank you, Ollie. And the same to you. I've thoroughly enjoyed it. It's been great fun.
Cool. Hopefully catch you again soon.
Take care.
So I hope you've enjoyed this podcast. I realise it's not quite entirely CAD, but often the people we work with aren't CAD people. And so it's quite interesting to see the other side. Particularly during this pandemic, the technology side of our work has become more challenging, and working with those less technically au fait. Don't forget to subscribe. We're on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and several other things. If you want to reach out to us, you can find us on Instagram at oct.ltd. on Facebook at OC Theatrical, on Twitter at OC Theatrical, and of course at our website octheatrical.com. Catch you on the next one.
This is the Cadisfaction Podcast. Cadisfaction.